Hi, I'm Janie Reisner, and welcome once again to Women's Voices. My guest this evening will be Sunsara Taylor of StopPatriarchy.org. Before I bring up my courageous guest, however, I'd like to share a little of my own writing on this last month before the year 2014. A year that seemed to pass in the blink of an eye. This time of year feels portentous as we anticipate another new year in our unfolding drama of loss and grave concerns for what might lie ahead for we creatures on planet Earth. I'd like to share with you my response to Thich Nhat Hanh's serious essay entitled, In 100 Years There Will Be No Humans on the Planet. That will be followed by my song, The Crystal Drum Sounds, The Sacred War Begins, then I will bring up my guest. Thich Nhat Hanh, the acclaimed Buddhist monk, said recently in The Ecologist, March 22, 2012, that maybe in 100 years there will be no more humans on the planet. He talked about the loss of diversity and why human vulnerability is not something we should despair about. What a curious statement, considering he is speaking about the end of life on Earth. He continues, the National Wildlife Federation tells us that every day 100 plants and animal species are lost to deforestation. Extinction of species is taking place every day. In 1 year, 200,000 species may be going into extinction. That is what is happening now. It is not a problem of the future. We know that 151 million years ago there was already global warming caused by gigantic volcanic eruptions. They caused the worst mass extinction in the history of the planet. The 6 Celsius increase in global temperature was enough to wipe out 95% of the species that were alive. Now a second global warming is taking place. This time because of deforestation and industrialization, and I add war, all man-made. After the disappearance of the 95% of species, the Earth took 100 million years to restore life on Earth. If our civilization disappears, it will take some time like that for another civilization to reappear. If 6 Celsius degrees take place, 95% of species will die out, including Homo sapiens. Mass extinction has already happened 5 times, and this is our 6th. That is why we have to learn to touch eternity with our in-breath and out-breath. According to Buddhist tradition, there is no birth and no death. After extinction, a thing will appear in other forms, so you have to breathe very deeply in order to acknowledge the fact that we humans may disappear in just 100 years. That is a sobering thought, isn't it? Sounds like Thich Nhat Hanh has resigned himself to his fate and is trying to soften the blow for the rest of us. The blow of the end of all life on Earth, which includes our grandchildren and their children. In my estimation, if life on Earth continues along the same path as now, we will not be here in 50 years. We will not be here in 30 years. If the militarized fascist power has not already done us in, the shift in climate will. Clearly, the folks in charge don't get this picture. Perhaps Thich Nhat Hanh's message will help penetrate their festering wall of denial, a crazed state of being, dripping with power and greed, all connections to the heart and the basic instinct of protecting life gone. As I've written many times before, these guys are nuts, but they are not just ordinary crazy. They are evil crazy, for they always have a motive, and that motive is to destroy. And any time we have evil, insane folks in power, which has been the case since patriarchy came into being, we have a downhill slide to death. It is the nature of the beast, so to speak. Patriarchy fosters death. It is a death cult. So here we are. If Thich Nhat Hanh is correct, if this came to pass, it would not be a pretty picture. Could you imagine the frightening storms and winds and unbearable heat? And we would all be very sick and starving, those of us still alive. watching death overtake everyone and everything. By then, the oceans would be dead, with no living thing in them, the lethal stench of decayed bodies overwhelming. Many of us are protected from the horrific loss of life happening in this moment. We can't see the death in the ocean, the whales and dolphins and pelicans and shrimp, and all manner of sea creatures and birds suffering and dying right now in noxious waters. We don't see all the humans suffering and dying with cancers of one kind or another, caused by pesticide spraying and poisoned foods and soils, radiation and polluted environments. We don't see the Iraqi babies born with horrific birth defects from depleted uranium. We don't see the starving children all over the world, their bones barely covered by skin. Few of us see soldiers and police shooting innocent children and their families in Iraq or wherever else they may be, even though it is happening here too, with more and more frequency. Skin color seems to play a part in that, but it is happening. Life has ceased to be precious in a world filled with guns and rape and torture and violence and militarism in every corner and every age, from birth to death. The men running this earth, the patriarchal psychopaths, appear to have just about succeeded in destroying all life on earth. We see the men in power happily giving away the lives of animals and birds and fish and children, giving away our need for clean water and air and food, and an earth free of poisons, giving away our heavens, our stratosphere and ionosphere, all perfectly and brilliantly created to protect our precious earth. The guys in charge are giving away our lives, life itself, in fact, so that they can wage war and make more money on oil, so they can frack and pollute and poison anywhere with anything, because money and power is the only prize there is. Their addiction is extremely dangerous and is about to do us all in. It is only the power of the mother and the grandmother that will bring their pathology to an end. Women and the like-minded men supporting them need to get clear in themselves right now that we not only have a right to speak up and say, no more destruction, no more fighting, no more violence, no more lying, no more arrogance, but that as mothers, whether we in fact we are a mother or not, we carry the moral strength to do so. We are the creators of life, and that is where our power lies. Protecting life is no small matter, and it is the essence of the mother, whether she be whale, bear, wolf, elephant, tiger, chimpanzee, horse, or human. Having suffered under patriarchy for the past 5,000 years, it is not easy as a woman to reclaim our rage, our maternal instinct, or to even recognize that we have a universal imperative to be outraged deep in ourselves. The maternal instinct comes with the territory of being a mother, even though it has been squashed from our consciousness by the evil man in charge. But it is definitely still there. It is a process that I continue to struggle with, being on the edge of a strong need to speak or act, but afraid of putting myself in such a vulnerable position. I remember it well when my spiritual journey began 30 years ago. What am I doing? Dare I speak? Dare I do anything? And yet I was driven. My words and music and art had too important a message to be stifled by my own feelings of inadequacy, and I knew it. Starhawk says, there is a belief, sometimes mouthed by members of so-called New Age spiritual groups, that when you resist something, you give it energy, you create it. This is a simplistic misconception that comes from a misunderstanding of how energy works. It confuses resistance with denial. When we deny something, we create it, or at least we create conditions in which it can grow and flourish. precisely because there is no resistance. In Nazi Germany, it was not the resistance to fascism that allowed the spread of anti-Semitism and led to the death camps. It was the widespread denial, the refusal to admit that such things could happen. It is not resistance to the possibility of nuclear holocaust that will bring it about. It is denial. This comes from Dreaming the Dark by Starhawk, page 98. Once we get clear that it is our job to speak up, to act when the moment arrives, my experience is that we find ourselves being guided by an inner wisdom, so that figuring it all out isn't that necessary, as well as discovering that we have allies. Being in the moment and present to your own feelings and inner direction is a learning experience in itself and leads to trusting yourself. I trust my instincts. Following our feelings is key, along with paying attention to how events come together. And as we do so, we come to realize that another hand beside our own is working this out. We are not alone. Thus, we learn to trust the process, we who are restoring life on earth and the wisdom of the Mother. Lema Bowie, recent Nobel Peace Prize recipient from Liberia, says, "It's time for women to stop being politely angry. I watch men talking about your reproductive issue, something they know nothing about, and I say, why are women not angry?" A woman friend writes, "What is happening in this country right now around birth control, mandated sonograms prior to abortions, is shocking. Where are we? We are going backwards. I hope for a coalition of women to stand up to this trend." And from my friend and Shimama, Leslie de la Madre, "It is very confusing about what century we live in. It's 2012 and men are still trying to tell women what to do and what not to do with our bodies. I would like to ask for a worldwide prayer for men to realize that birth control is not their issue. What is their issue is their jealousy fear of women's creative power, age old, at least 5,000 years. When men get a grip on their fear, peace will naturally and organically surface. We need to start creating women's councils around the world to create the world we wish to live in. It most certainly will not include fear-mongering men who try to stand on the backs of women every chance they get." I composed a song 25 years ago about the sacred war, the one we are in right now. The sacred war begins. The crystal drum sounds. This is the war between women and men, the war God the Father has been waging against the Great Mother and the qualities of the mother, against mothering, against nurturing and caring for and compassion, mocking our demand that we live in honesty and integrity with justice, loving and protecting life, living in gratitude for the gift of life and our precious Mother Earth. This is the war we have been waiting for, and our Mother is here to guide us.
The crystal drum sounds, the crystal drum sounds. The sacred war begins, the sacred war begins. The crystal drum sounds, the sacred war begins. Crystal drum sounds. The sacred war begins. The sacred the crystal drum sounds.
The crystal drum sounds. The sacred war begins.
The sacred war begins.
The crystal drum.
Begins. The sacred war begins. The sacred war begins. The sacred war begins.
And now I'd like to bring up my guest, Sansara Taylor, who is a writer for Revolution newspaper, a host of WBAI's Equal Time for Free Thought, and sits on the advisory board of World Can't Wait. She has written on the rise of theocracy, wars, and repression in the U.S., led in building resistance to these crimes, and contributed to the movement for a revolution to put an end to all this. This is a national movement that began at the end of 2011 and broke out with a talk on the occasion of International Women's Day in March 2012, given by Sansara Taylor. It began with a bold call to action. Our mission is to challenge the new generation, in particular, to reject this culture of rape and pornography, to resist the shaming of women who have sex and or abortions, to wage fierce cultural and political resistance, to wake others up, and to celebrate, fight for, and win the full equality and liberation of women. Hello, Sansara.
Hi, Janie. It's great to talk with you.
It's wonderful to have you. You've been a very busy woman recently, perhaps always.
I have been, yes.
You know, the first question I ask my guests is, what part did your own mother play in your becoming the courageous woman that you are today?
Ah, I want to say I really appreciated hearing the piece that you wrote and read to us at the beginning, and I'm looking forward to getting into some of it. I thought that, you know, you really very, very poignantly and movingly spoke to a lot of the horrors that are being inflicted on the planet itself and on the people all across this globe, which are very important, and I'm glad you're shining a light on. And then, you know, there's a lot of things that you said about where that comes from and how that can be resolved that I think it'd be good to take apart a little bit, because I don't feel quite the same way that you do about the innate maternal instinct of women. To say, when I talk about my mother, I think of her as a unique human being on this planet who was shaped by social forces, not somebody who was innately one way or another, just like I don't see any women that way. But she is somebody who I think is an incredibly principled and honest and curious person who has always been extremely supportive and respectful, I think, more than anything towards me. I mean, towards others too, but in relationship to my life, I think has always had a tremendous approach of treating me like a human being and thinking about what I had to say and sharing honestly with me how she sees the world. And I've learned a tremendous amount from her, and I think that, including a lot of confidence that she gave me. But the other thing that I think is that she always made me feel like, and I not just feel that way, but I think she learned from me, and she learned from her other kids, and she learned from the world, and I think that had an influence on me as well, being treated as somebody with ideas that mattered, and also watching somebody who was curious about the world. And she definitely did not conform to you know, she a lot of the conventions and stereotypes that women are often forced into or forced to suffocate under, even as she faced, like all women, her own share of punishment for being female on this planet. She definitely never succumbed to that. So I guess that's a long answer. I mean, I could probably talk about it a lot longer too, but those are a few thoughts.
Thank you. How did you come to create StopPatriarchy.org and create the march that you began?
So almost 2 decades ago, I came to understand that the world does not have to be the way it is, that the world is a horror for the majority of the world, of the world's people. A lot of that you did speak to. And so that it doesn't have to be this way, that it's not a result of human nature. It's the nature of the system that we live under. And I came to understand that we live in an imperialist dominated world, and that with a revolution, a genuine communist revolution, we could get to a whole different world. There's not a problem of scarcity on the planet anymore. There's not a problem. It's not human nature for men to dominate women. It is not innate and unchangeable. So from that perspective, I've been part of building the movement for revolution, building a movement for revolution, and in particular a communist revolution, as it's been re-envisioned by Bob Avakian, for quite some time. And a big and central part of this, of the need for revolution and the basis to make a revolution, is the fact that half of humanity, the women, are subjugated, oppressed, face systematic violence and discrimination and disrespect in many, many kinds of ways. And, you know, it's an outrage, but it's also a potential source of, it's one of the reasons why you need a revolution to get rid of the system that gives rise to that. But it's also one of the potential sources of energy and anger and creativity and conscious initiative to make that revolution, is the fight for the liberation of women. And so it's, over the years, it's become increasingly clear just how intense the backlash against women made in the 1960s and 70s has become, and how this is coming together with bigger changes in the world, so that all over the world, violence against women is getting more extreme. Pornography and degradation of women is getting more violent, more humiliating, even as it's becoming more mainstream. We've seen this vicious all-out assault on women's right to abortion and birth control, trying to force women back into the role of breeders. And it's really reached a point where it's going to be resolved one way or the other. We're either going to have women slammed backwards to the 1950s and before, or we're going to have an enormous fight society-wide with millions and millions of people standing up and refusing to allow this to happen to women. And so bringing forward resistance to the oppression of women is a big part of building a movement for revolution, but it's also something that many millions of people can see the need and the basis to do. And there's been wrestling with that, with this situation, among those of us who are in the movement for revolution and also strategizing with people more broadly. So a couple of years ago, it became more clear that there needed to be a forum for women and men throughout society of all generations, but especially young people, to step forward and not just fight one policy that affects women or one form of violence against women or one outrage against women, but to really take on the entirety of this vicious backlash against women's rights and women's lives. And so we did, on International Women's Day, on March 8th, 2011, we kicked this off with rallies in several cities around the country. And I did, like you said, I gave a speech that kind of drew together what I've been learning about what women are facing and what I see as the basis for many, many people to step forward in resistance around this. And what we did is, on that first day, on International Women's Day, we had a march that went from St. Patrick's Cathedral, which is one of the most influential Catholic institutions in the country, here in New York City, where Timothy Dolan, the Archbishop who spearheaded the rebellion against birth control, where he is based. We started there, we protested there, and we marched from there to the military recruiter's office in Times Square, where violence against women is at astronomical rates within the U.S. military, because it is a patriarchal, violent institution, reactionary, violent institution. And then we marched to the porn shops in 42nd Street, Times Square area to really protest against the objectification and degradation of women. And we drew the links and said that between the Pope and the pornographers, there's really no fundamental difference. Both of them strip women of their humanity and reduce women to objects, one to sex objects, the other to breeders, but neither of those are fully human beings. And that we reject all forms of patriarchy, all forms of degradation and violence against women.
When you started, I'd like you to talk about the abortions rights freedom ride in this past summer. And I loved what you said about it, launching a nationwide political and moral counteroffensive against the attacks on abortion, resetting the terms and reclaiming the moral high ground from the anti-abortion movement for the liberation of women, and rallying people across 15 states to rely on ourselves to defeat the war on women. Reclaiming the moral high ground, I like that very much.
I think that's really important.
Right. It's our bodies, after all.
I'm sorry, I'm supposed to speak more quietly so that we don't get the static. So
yes.
I'll modulate my voice.
Oh,
but we are we're in a situation of emergency, so it gets me wanting to talk loudly, but I'll modulate. We are in a situation of emergency of women's right to abortion and our right to birth control. In the last 3 years alone, we've seen more than 60 abortion clinics closed. In this year alone, we've seen we've seen hundreds of restrictions introduced into state legislatures that would close down clinics and restrict access. And we've seen a situation where, as this assault on women's right to abortion escalates, I mean, there are 5 states in this country with only 1 abortion clinic left in them, and most of those clinics in those 5 states, those single clinics left, are facing legal battles to stay open. And I think we have to confront the fact that if women don't have the right to access abortion on demand and without apology, if women are shamed, coerced, or simply denied access to abortion so that they're forced to have children against their will, that is a form of enslavement. There are, you know, a lot of times people think that the question of abortion is about babies, about life. It has nothing to do with babies. Fetuses are not babies, and women are not incubators. The fight over abortion has always, 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 always been a fight over what role women will play in society. Will women be enslaved to their reproduction? Will they be forced to have children against their will? Or will women be able to control their own bodies, their own reproduction, their own destinies, and be treated as full human beings? And being a mother, being a parent, actually, and this is, again, I think being a parent, because I think there's not a fundamental difference between women and men when it comes to nurturing, when it comes to rearing children. We're socialized different, but there's not a fundamental innate difference. Being a parent can be one of the most extraordinary things that you could do. It could be wonderful if you want to do it, if you have the ability to do it on the basis that you want to, if you rear your child with good, you know, based on respect for humanity and in a good way. But if you're forced to have a child against your will, it's a lot like rape. Your body is controlled by a male supremacist patriarchal state, and you are forced to have a child against your will. There's very little that's more degrading and dehumanizing and frankly enslaving. And so that's what the fight over abortion is. And for that reason, for both the state of emergency that we're in and because of what's really at stake with this question, that's why we did exactly like you said. We launched the Abortion Rights Freedom Ride, which was a 1 month long project where a couple dozen of us all together drove from both coasts, from California and New York, all the way up to North Dakota, where we visited the last clinic in the state and rallied support for abortion rights there. And we drove down through Wichita, where Dr. George Tiller was assassinated. He was a heroic abortion doctor. And we drove down to Mississippi, to the last abortion clinic in Mississippi. And we stopped in about, 15 or 16 other places along the way. And we visited all these places, and we rallied mass support for abortion on demand and without apology. You either stand for women's humanity, women's right to abortion on demand without apology, or you're allowing women to be enslaved. There is no common ground. There's no middle ground. There's no moral ambiguity about this. And when we did that, we helped clarify for people what is right and wrong, and rally people to stand up and to tell the truth about this. I can't resist. I have to go back to one of the things that you read, and it's because I actually share a lot of the concerns and the hopes that you were laying out, that I feel these things are important to return to. You said, you know, people have to trust their instincts and look within themselves. And I think that we have to look outside of ourselves, and that a lot of people's gut instincts and a lot of what they've learned is from the society that they live in. A lot of women feel shame over having abortion. A lot of women feel shame about having sex. I think we have to look and we have to pull back the lens and look at where did the social structures and the culture that shames women come from? And is it right or wrong? Is it in the interest of humanity or not? And we have to apply science, and we have to look outside of our own experience. And actually, that can have understanding those things can have a profound impact on changing the way we feel, including shattering the shame that women feel over abortion. Many don't feel shame, but all too many do because they've been shamed. And that we can't just say that we shouldn't feel that way. We have to look at where did that come from, and is it right and wrong, right or wrong? And that's a lot of what we were fighting to do with this Freedom Ride, and it has a big effect on people.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. Just as reading it, I thought in the moment how helpful that must have been for the women at those clinics. This is KZYX. I'm Janie Reasoner on Women's Voices with my guest, Sansara Taylor, who is the initiator for StopPatriarchy.org. And we want to talk about your website and all the, because you've gotten a lot of press. You've been on many, many talk shows, and that's wonderful. Oh, I agree with what you're saying. We need both. You know, I'm speaking from the perspective of an 80-year-old woman, grandmother, and great-grandmother, and I assure you that what my instincts inside are have been well-honed over the years, you know? So that mm-hmm. is where my power comes from, and I think that's where a lot of women's, but you have to grow into it in a certain way. You know, women a long time ago were doing to claim, take back their own rights because they had been so brainwashed by patriarchal words and thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I have to say to you and to everybody listening, I think everybody, you know, whether you're 8 years old or 80, but especially I think it's a really good example, what you're doing, that everybody has a responsibility to be part of wrangling with these questions and these problems and contributing what we can to solving them. And I hope that everybody listening, they probably do because they listen to you all the time, but I know when you told me you were 80, I was very inspired by that. So I hope other people take that to heart as well. And everybody has a contribution to make. I mean, it's so important.
Yeah, it is. You have the website, stoppatriarchy.org. And what might people find there?
Okay, so if you go to our website, you will find the call to action that is sort of the mission statement of this movement, which some of which you were reading a minute ago, and it does make the connections between, you know, it starts out by saying we're told every day that women have won their equality, and that's just BS. And then it walks through the violence that women face. Every 15 seconds a woman is beaten. One in four college women will be raped while she's in college. It goes through a lot of what women face. And then it makes the connections between the increasingly violent nature of pornography and the assault on women's right to abortion. So that's sort of our mission, and I think that people should go there. You can also sign up to be on our email list. You can start get connected with a chapter in the city that you're in if we have one, or you could be part of starting a chapter. And then you can also find a lot of the resources that we have. We both have that website, and we have the blog, patriarchy.tumblr.com, and we have a lot of articles that get into the science. What is a fetus? Why is it not a baby? We have coverage of some of what we did during the Abortion Rights Freedom Ride, which I really recommend. We have a full report on that, which is about, I think it's like 50 pages, and it's a very deep summation of our lessons learned and looking forward. So you know, how do we build on this to really not just say, oh, we did something exciting and inspiring, even though I think we did, But what are the lessons? Because we have to go forward, not just that patriarchy, but everybody in this society to actually defeat this war on women. So that's a very rich report that I recommend people go and read.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's ways to connect in with learning more and getting involved. I think those are the main things you'll find there.
The fact that broader culture has been pornified is terribly alarming. It's terribly devastating. It's, you know, children, what did they say? Children, I've read someplace, you know, most children by the age of 10 or 12 has seen pornography.
Yes.
I mean, what are we, there's no.
No, you're right. And I think it's really important because there's, especially among younger people, and this even goes on and very widespread on college campuses and women's studies, gender studies, among so-called third-wave feminists, among way too many people today, where they say, "Oh, what's the problem with pornography? Oh, what's the problem with porn? You know, we can have feminist porn. We can be empowered through porn. You know, what about sex workers' rights? What about the right of women who want to be in porn or who want to sell their bodies?" And I think that this is a very, very, it's just such a reflection of a very bad situation that we've found ourselves in. Because the reality is, go ahead.
I couldn't agree with you more. That's all I want to say. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I just want to, I'm glad.
Yeah, we need to talk about that because I feel the same way. It's like, are you kidding? You know, when people say this is okay, it's not okay.
Yeah, and the reality is, first we have to confront, the reality is the overwhelming majority of women and young girls whose bodies are used in pornography and prostitution in this country and around the world, they are tricked, they are kidnapped, they are beaten, they are coerced, they are drugged, they are in many ways coerced and enslaved into the conditions that they're in. The overwhelming majority, and that is just not a question. I mean, I have a friend who told me not long ago about a relative that he has in India who lives near the red light district of Calcutta. And she said that she was walking home one day, and this gang of men kidnapped her. They ran up behind her, they grabbed her, and they dragged her away. And she happened to be fortunate that she had some connections in the city where somebody with some authority said, "Oh, you can't keep her." But that's actually what happens to women and girls. They just, you know, huge numbers of women and girls, or their families are starving and they get sold. So that's the first thing. Then, what's the, even for those sliver, there's a sliver of women for whom they choose to be in pornography and they actually have other options. And they say, "This is what I want to do. I want to be sell my body in prostitution." It's a very small number, percentage-wise. And then that gets trumpeted, that gets broadcast, and people say, "Oh, it's empowering." And the porn industry puts a lot of funds behind saying it's empowering and all of this. But the reality is that the institution of pornography trains men and all women in viewing women as objects, as nothing more than things to be used, to be degraded. It turns sex, it takes sex and takes it from something that could be about mutual exploration, mutual caring, mutual, you know, passion and desire and pleasure, and turns it based on mutual respect and interacting with the other person's full humanity, and it eroticizes degradation. It turns sex into something where one party can only get off by dehumanizing and disrespecting the humanity of the other. And overwhelmingly, it's not surprisingly, the women who are disrespected and dehumanized. And that idea that violence and degradation should be eroticized and sexualized, that's what pornography is. And it's not, you know, being against pornography is being against the enslavement and degradation of women. It's not being against sex. It's actually, frankly, pornography is a very degraded and impoverished vision of sexuality.
Right. Absolutely. I wonder if you would like to have people call in if they have questions.
I would love that.
All right.
I would love that. I would totally love that. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Our telephone number here is 707-937-5103. I'll say that again. If you're out of the area, it's 707-937-5103. If you're in the area, of course, it's 937-5103. And I'm speaking with Sansara Taylor. You know, I first found your name. I came across you because I saw you associated with Chris Hedges. That you were speaking in, not in exactly debate, but you were communicating and speaking at the same event or events, perhaps.
Yeah, we did have a. It was several years ago, and he had engaged recently in a debate with Sam Harris and I believe somebody else, some of the prominent atheists, and they had had a vigorous debate, which was good. And it was one of the things that was interesting, though, is that Chris Hedges' politics were much more anti-imperialist. And even though he was very religious, he had some political positions that me, as a militant atheist and communist, who disagreed with him on religion, I had more unity with some of the political positions that he was taking. So we had a dialogue, a public dialogue, where we tried to explore, atheism and religious outlooks from shared concerns about imperialism and the plunder of the planet and the fate of women.
Okay.
So it was a pretty rich dialogue.
Yeah, I bet. We do have a call. Shall we take it?
Yes, let's
okay.
do it.
Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I had a question I wanted to ask Sansara.
Go ahead. Can you hear?
Okay.
Sansara.
Yes, I can.
Good.
Hi. I was just wondering that I always hear that things are better in the Scandinavian countries, like in Norway and Denmark, and I was wondering if you have any, what your opinion is on that, and if so, if there's any way we can use that as a model somehow in the United States.
What is your name?
Barbara.
Okay, Barbara, thanks for calling and thanks for listening. I guess I think that we need actually a total revolution. Scandinavian countries, Norway, these other countries, they're still capitalist societies. They are societies that have more social, less social and economic disparity within them, and more social programs. But what we actually need is not just to think about how do we more equalize things in the U.S. or how do we pass laws that reform things in the U.S. There's no understanding the American standard of living or way of life without looking at it in relationship to the exploitation and plunder of people all over the world. Our clothes are made in sweatshops in Bangladesh and Thailand and China and Haiti. The food we eat is grown by, undocumented people who are living in the shadows, largely, or in agribusiness where peasants have been driven out of their lands. All of this is happening because of the ravages of an imperialist system that is driven to exploit labor all over the world to build up sort of where we're living at the top of the food chain. And really, you're either going to have society where everything is based on production for profit and exchange, and all of the competition and the chaos and the destruction of the environment and the brutalization against humanity that leads to, and the wars and competitions that leads to, or you make a total revolution, an actual revolution that overturns the whole system, that in a revolutionary crisis, not today, but when there's a major crisis, would dismantle and defeat the military, the police force, the courts, the laws, that would uproot the whole way that the old society is run and establish a new socialist society that is overcoming past inequalities, that is geared towards meeting people's needs, and that brings about a radically liberating culture. This is actually laid out. How that would happen, I would point you and everybody else to the Constitution that the Revolutionary Communist Party has published. It's available at revcom.us, and it's a constitution for the new socialist republic of North America. it's intentionally not called America or the United States, because that's a, the United States is a country whose borders were forged through unjust wars and seizure of land from Native peoples and from Mexico, and that a revolution would be forged on the basis of the oppressed rising up and overturning this order and establishing a new revolutionary society. So I would recommend that at revcom.us. And it's really, it's a living, concrete, and visionary blueprint for how a revolutionary society would function in the framework of the new synthesis of communism that Bob Avakian has really been wrestling over decades to develop. He learned deeply from the socialist revolutions in the Soviet Union and in China before those revolutions were reversed. What was accomplished, the tremendous things accomplished, what were the shortcomings, and what was the even the grievous errors, but also the thinking and the approach that led to all of that. And he's brought that together with changes in the world and developments in human understanding to develop a new synthesis. So I think this is actually what humanity needs, and people should get into that. It's really the only alternative to the way that the world is currently operating and destroying the planet. I know that's a long answer, but that I would strongly recommend to get into that.
And the misogyny would disappear with that revolution, you believe?
It wouldn't disappear. It would be an ongoing fight, both in the making of the revolution as part of building a movement for revolution, and it would be a major part when you establish a socialist society. Actually, you'll see in the Constitution, it makes very clear that a major principle of the society, besides repairing what damage can be repaired to the environment, besides gearing production to meeting people's needs rather than profit, in addition to serving, you know, and having an internationalist framework of concern for people around the world as much as people within your own society, those are sort of bedrock principles. But another basic principle is that the oppression of women emerged together with the development of class divisions, and that it is a very big cornerstone to getting to a world of human emancipation without classes, the fight to fully liberate women. So it doesn't disappear because you make revolution, but in making revolution, you get rid of the framework that requires patriarchy, that reinforces patriarchy, and you have the chance then to wage a major ongoing social revolution, to unleash the fury of women as a driving force in that revolution, all the way forward till the oppression of women, the idea of women being different fundamentally than men, the notions of gender, all of that gets uprooted, torn up as a major driving force in transforming the whole way that human beings relate to each other to get to a real, genuine communist society. So it doesn't, it can be abolished through this revolution. It cannot be abolished under this system, but it's not just an automatic outgrowth. It's an actual driving force in making the revolution, and it's one that everybody who's concerned with emancipating humanity has to be part of fighting for the liberation of women, and it's a cornerstone of this revolution.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for calling. I'm going to get my two cents in here.
Yes, please do.
Because if you consider that for most of our time on Earth, we lived in harmony. We lived without war. Women and men lived egalitarian lives, all contributing to living together, all understanding we were all children of one great mother, understanding life to be sacred. For 46,000 years, we have done that. It's the natural way. The child comes in love. And I do believe women, of course, have a maternal instinct that's how we got here. That's how animals take care of their offspring. That's kind of the main force of being a mother, is mothering. And obviously in this crazy world, that's all been distorted as everything else has been. And I really appreciate your laying out so succinctly what you see. And I realize there's much more to it than you've...
I think these are the kinds of conversations we need to be having, a lot more. So I do hope people will go to revcom.us. That's R-E-V like Victor, C-O-M. .us, mm-hmm. stands for Revolutionary Communist, revcom.us, and you can learn more about, you can find the Constitution I was talking about there. You can find out actually a lot about how the liberation of women fits into this revolution, but also how the protection of the planet fits into this revolution, how real, genuine internationalism, where do these wars come from? You know, when I say it's not human nature, how do we know that's the case? A lot of that, you can find Bob Avakian's work on that website. So I
was going to say, it's not human nature because we've lived for thousands of years without war.
No, you're totally right.
So the child doesn't come in wanting to kill people. The child comes in love.
Mm-hmm.
And that's... Mm-hmm. We need to get back there, and we will.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that we can. I think whether we will depends on what all of us do.
That's true.
And whether, you know, in your opening monologue, you talked about denial and how people flinch and don't want to look. And sometimes today people feel that, I've heard this a lot lately, people say that the problem seems so overwhelming that I'm just going to put my head down. I'm going to do my part. I'll work on this thing or that thing or this thing or that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And all, I mean, I can't say that any of the things, well, some of the things maybe seem petty or not the most important, but actually mainly people are working on very real problems. But it's not okay to not look at the whole of it and really try to reckon with. If you know that the planet is burning up, you know that 10 million children die every year unnecessarily from preventable disease and malnutrition, and we have the resources to deal with that. It's a system. It's a system of capitalism and imperialism that requires and enforces patriarchy, that requires the oppression of whole peoples and countries, that has built a wall between those who are trained to work with their minds and the billions of people on this planet who are locked out of education and intellectual work and forced to work with their backs if they can find work at all. That comes from a system, and we have to confront that, and that system is not permanent. It doesn't have to stay this way. There's a strategy. There's a party, the Revolutionary Communist Party. There's a leader who's developed a whole framework that makes revolution viable and desirable in the world today. That's Bob Avakian and his new synthesis of communism. And people, you have to check it out. It's not okay not to look. You have to learn about it. You have to be part of spreading it, even as you have to act on what you know today. And so, you know, I know we're going to run out of time, so I would encourage people, once again, to go to revcom.us and learn about this, spread it to some of your friends, and as you are learning, get involved. Come to stoppatriarchy.org. Get involved in taking a stand around women's right to abortion today, against the degradation of pornography and the mainstreaming of that. Everybody can do something. And, you know, write to me through stoppatriarchy@gmail.com. Let me and others in this movement hear from you, and let's stay in touch as we exchange our ideas and our thinking on this, and put our energy and our intellect and our anger into fighting to change this world.
Thank you so much for being my guest. It's been lovely having you.
Janie, thank you so much. I appreciate talking with you.
And many good wishes.
Okay, thanks so much.
Good night. You have been listening to Sansara Taylor of StopPatriarchy.org.